Hello and welcome to the Autism Mums podcast.
I'm Victoria.
And I'm Natalie.
We're two sisters raising autistic children who know the joy, the challenges and the everyday moments.
This is a supportive space for honest conversations, practical tips, shared strength and expert advice.
Whether you're celebrating a win, surviving a meltdown or just trying to make it through the day, we're right here with you.
Join us as we share the ups, the downs, and everything in between parenting autistic children. Hi, it's Natalie. Unfortunately, I was unable to be in today's interview, but before we begin, I wanted to take a moment to introduce our brilliant guest, Kate Lynch.
Kate is a somatic mindfulness coach dedicated to creating a kinder, more inclusive future for all families. Since 2002, she has supported thousands of parents around the world with mindfulness, self-compassion and somatic movement, helping them avoid burnout while raising their neurodivergent children.
If you've ever felt overwhelmed or uncertain in your parenting journey, this episode could really help you. Kate has some really great practical advice that could be easily implemented into your daily life. So, let's hand over to Victoria and Kate.
Hello and welcome to the podcast, Kate. It's great to have you here today.
Thanks. It's so great to be here, Victoria.
So you're a somatic mindfulness coach, I believe. Did I say that right?
You said it perfectly. And the reason I use the big word somatic, which a lot of people ask what that means, it just means of the body. I've been a yoga teacher for over 20 years. And these days, a lot of times people don't understand. They really take that as like a kind of a gym exercise teacher. And what I do is much more about the mind-body connection, about self-care, and specifically serving parents who are really struggling with how to even begin to focus on themselves. They may be neurodivergent themselves, or just really struggling with this unexpected change of having a child with a neurodivergent brain. What I was doing before when I first started teaching is very, very different from what I'm doing now, and it's more therapeutic. So that's why I use that word somatic mindfulness coach, because it's not just about staying in your head. It is really about bringing it into our body so our nervous system can help us regulate our emotions.
I have heard the term before, but I wasn't sure of what it meant. So thank you very much for explaining that. So how did your work evolve into focusing on helping parents?
I was a yoga teacher for about 10 years, and then I had my son. I have one. I was pretty late in life, and we struggled with fertility. So I felt very prepared. I had been teaching prenatal yoga and parent baby yoga for a really long time. Had my son, and things were really different than I expected. He was someone who had a lot of needs very early on. We didn't know about colic, but it kind of felt like that. And then he had a lot of needs, but not a need for sleep. And I had him at 41. I had a very hard time that first year because I did not sleep more than 2 hours at a stretch.
I can relate to that.
Yeah, I know a lot of parents can't. And it nearly broke me. It really felt that way. So I sat my husband down after 1 year and I said, let's make absolutely sure that we don't have another child, one and done. I didn't know if I could survive it. So raising Ocean has been a little like raising two or three kids, I think. And our family feels very complete now. So bringing it back around to my career, I really put it on autopilot. I took the first 6 months to just be with him, and then I would take him to my classes. And my career was on autopilot for a while when my son was younger, because luckily I had been doing the job for a long time. I could just drop him off and teach a class and pick him up, and it all worked out pretty well. We would race home for naps, and I was really trying to keep him on a routine because I found that routine really helped him. And then parents started asking me, parents of neurodivergent kids started to find me and ask me advice. And I had been a trusted family educator for a while as a prenatal and postpartum yoga teacher. And it just felt like the most natural next thing to do to start teaching parents how to use mindfulness, and how I had gone from feeling nearly broken to remembering some of my very basic mindfulness techniques. I distilled them into small drops that I could use while I was with my son, not separately, not having to check out for hours at a time to go do yoga in another room, because that just wasn't possible. So my meditation and my mindfulness and my body-based practices became part of our rituals, our routines, our life. And that is what kept me afloat those first couple of years, was just really relying on those little tiny practices, like even feeling the soles of your feet on the floor, like very simple little things like that. So that evolved. I'm also a writer, and that evolved into writing a book and beginning to work with parents in the community and one-on-one.
Can you tell me a little bit?
2019, there was a call from this autism publisher if, anyone had any ideas for books. And I just wrote them a simple paragraph back. I knew nothing about writing books, but I'm like, hey, I'm a mom. I'm also a mindfulness teacher, yoga teacher. This idea that might help parents of 30-second to 3-minute they can weave in throughout their day. And they said, that sounds great, write us a proposal. Then I had to figure out how to write a proposal. And then I wrote the 3 years because COVID made it harder for parents. I mean, in my case, it certainly did, to have any time to myself. My son was in school, but he wasn't in school during COVID at all. We live in Brooklyn. It was very much a lockdown situation for most of that time. When he went to bed, I would write for 10 minutes at least every night. I wrote this book. I turned in the book on the deadline. 2 weeks later, the publisher called me up and said, we're going out of business. I have this book that I feel really needs to get out into the world. I spent 2 years with the book proposal. And then she sent it to a couple of publishers. You know what they said? They said, we don't think parents of atypical kids have time to read. I said, yeah, you're probably right. But this book, because it is specifically for them, and there isn't that much for us out there, really, like I'd say 90% of parenting books are very prescriptive, or the stories about parenting, raising autistic kids can be almost depressing
Yes.
rather than giving a strategy. So this combines my struggle, my strategies, and with the joys that we share as well as to evolve and get better at this.
Oh, fantastic.
Okay.
Well, let me know when it's out because I'm very interested to read it. Because as you say, there isn't that much that caters for parents doing it a slightly different way.
So I did start this blog on Substack because I wanted to get the work that I'm doing out into the community in a way that's really bite-sized, available, free. So that's the extension of the book and the kind of accessible way.
You know what I would say to the publisher who said, we don't think these parents have time to read? I don't think that's right. I have quite a long school drive for my son. His school is not nearby, which is fairly common, I think, for specialist schools. So it's a great time to listen to audiobooks. And then another way that I would read, as you were saying, might be bite size, but would be on my Kindle app. So if I was sitting with my son at night time, I could read on that. So I disagree with them. So you can tell them
Thank you.
that.
I said that's why there's such a good opportunity to have audiobooks, to have a workbook that we could publish alongside it, where you just flip to a page when you need a certain thing, when you're feeling really mad and you need to do something to help you regulate your nervous system so you can be present. Or when, I don't know what you in the UK, when you have, we call it an IEP meeting, when you go into the school and you advocate for your child and you come up with a plan.
Our equivalent is an EHCP here,
Okay. So I,
which the government are trying to get rid of
oh no.
currently. Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. They're looking to reform the system at the moment, but it's very worrying because it looks like what they're going to do is just take away parents' rights with the process to get your children what they need. I'm not sure about your system, but ours seems to be very broken under a lot of financial pressure. And so they're looking at ways, essentially, I think that they can save money. I'm suspicious that they're not looking at how they can improve it, but just make cuts because these children are costing them a lot of money.
Yeah, I have so much to say about that. And of course, here in the US, I mean, we could have a whole podcast about that. I'm a
We could.
strong advocate for early intervention and specialists being well funded and fully funding public schools because these children are growing up, whether they like it or not. And we want to give them every opportunity to flourish, to thrive, because their unique ideas maybe what helped this planet survive.
Agree with you.
And I'm not saying every single autistic child is going to change the world, but coming together and knowing how to work with others and all of these little skills that our children can learn, and they're as hard for our kids as they can be, but they are incredibly essential. At this time, these are skills that employers are looking for. And there are so many places now that are looking for autistic minds, looking to hire them because our kids do think differently. And if they get early intervention, they can thrive to the extent that their brains are able to. It's incredibly short-sighted of that education and that support and hiding it from parents. I had to learn from other parents what was available, what my rights were, what my son's rights were, because it's really not available. It's not out there. It's hidden.
No, absolutely. That's exactly the same here. I learned from other parents as well. It wasn't until my son started struggling with trying to go into school that I realized there were other parents also struggling with their children and getting them into school. And it was them who gave me the advice and next steps. I've said it before, but there's no roadmap. Once your child isn't fitting that mold and following that path and has the struggles, there's nobody to say to you, this is what you need to do they? Nobody
Yeah,
official.
exactly. So, and there have been kind educators along the way who said, get this evaluation, tell them this, tell them that, give them the full picture, to them as well. But those parents, yeah, I don't know what I would have done without the other parents that I met along the way.
No, me neither.
So, to bring it back full circle, going into an IEP meeting, I would often be extremely nervous. I would cry during the meeting, all of those things. And I think it's perfectly natural and understandable because we literally have to live with the outcomes of these meetings. We're the only ones who are going to live with whatever happens long term. So we're more invested. And when we care that much, we're going to have stress. It's just natural to have stress. So if we have a strategy or something to do right before going into a meeting like that to not only help relieve our stress, but also empower us to feel just as important as everyone else in the room, I think it's really valuable.
I think so too. Those meetings, they can feel really intimidating as you feel that pressure to do the best by your child and obviously the fate of your child. But what's going to happen to your child? It feels like it's in other people's hands at these meetings. So it's really stressful. I've struggled with that, with being in that situation and yet wanting to be calm and zen. And yet, as you say, you just can't avoid feeling that stress. So if there are some tools that you can take in to help, I think that's fantastic.
Yeah. So, want to do one right now?
Yeah.
Okay. Make yourself as big as possible. You don't have to stand up, but just spread your arms and make yourself as big as possible. And we're going to make bear claws and stick in our tongues and roar. Are you ready? You're going to do it with me, right?
Okay.
Okay. So, breathe in.
Okay.
Ah! Yeah. Two more times. Yeah. Let's do it one more time. One more time.
Okay.
I didn't learn that from a Buddhist monk. I learned that from the TV show Ted Lasso. And there's a character named Rebecca. And Rebecca is this tall, beautiful, wealthy, empowered woman who owns a sports team, and she has to walk into a meeting of more empowered rich men who own sports teams, and she doesn't want to feel intimidated by them. So she goes into the bathroom, locks the bathroom door, and she makes herself really big, and she does that exact same thing. And this is something we could do. We can excuse ourselves. We can go in the bathroom if we're feeling like we need to cry or disempowered. We can run in the bathroom. We can stare at ourselves in the mirror and like, and pull in that predator energy, right? That big taking up space energy and release some of that anger into something we can use to advocate for our kids. So I don't know how you felt after doing that. I'd love to hear.
Oh, I felt bummer. I did. I don't know. It gets that stress out for sure. I'm going to do that again.
And laughter, of course, is the best medicine. So that can
That's
help as
true.
well.
Fantastic. I love that. One of the things I know that you talk about is how we can help our neurodivergent children feel safer in an uncertain world. Can you tweet about that? What does safety mean for them?
I will tie it into what we were just talking about because a lot of times parents think it's about teaching our kids self-regulation skills. And that can be part of it. But imagine you're a parent who's very nervous or afraid or even angry at the school system and how your child might interpret that, as opposed to a parent who feels empowered and like they can be just as important as everyone else in the room, and that they're going to be able to advocate well for their child, and how that energy might be interpreted by a child. Like they really pick up on our deeper emotional cues. And I remember once when Ocean, my son, was probably 2, maybe 3, it was before his diagnosis. He was diagnosed at 3. But right around that time, when I was very anxious, we were filling out all the paperwork. We were trying to get the diagnosis. We were trying to get the appointments made. We were getting all this feedback from his preschool teachers. And we were just walking along next to the playground on the sidewalk. And I remember this so well. He asked, "Mama, am I the baby you wanted?" He knew we were wishing and praying for a child, and he knew he was loved, but there was part of him that wondered, was he the one, or were we wishing for a different child? And when that hit me, of course, I knelt down. I wish I remember exactly the words he used and what I said, but I realized in that moment my anxiety was really affecting him. And that was a turning point for me. Okay, your anxiety is not just affecting you, it's affecting your son and having him believe that he is the source of the anxiety. And truly, he was not. The source of the anxiety was the system. And of course, my fears about his future, my fears about how he would be accepted and supported in this world. But we loved him wholeheartedly. And so I started to focus more on giving him that side of myself. But it was a stressful time. So I always want to teach parents first about nervous system regulation. And it's not just about being calm all the time. Sometimes it's about stepping into your power, like what we just did. Sometimes it's about meeting the moment, but doing it with clarity and by helping ourselves feel more regulated, we will be a safer haven, a sanctuary for our kids, because we'll understand our own nervous system and our own reactions.
That does make sense. That's a lovely story. So, what's the vagus nerve and why is it important for us?
The vagus nerve is the 10th cranial nerve, and its origin is in the base of our skull. But the reason it's called vagus is not because of Las Vegas. It's because it's a vagrant nerve. It comes out from that space and it has branches that go into our face and head, our throat, and down and connects with all our organs, especially our gut. So if you've ever had a gut feeling, that's your vagus nerve reacting to decide whether it's a safe situation or a dangerous situation. And the way it does this, once it's interpreted that body up signal, like from our face, from someone else's facial expressions. It takes in this information in the blink of an eye. It will either help us to have more of the love hormone, oxytocin or serotonin, the happy hormone, or to trigger the adrenal glands to produce adrenaline, cortisol, the stress hormone, so that we can run away. You may have heard of flight, right? Stand our ground, the fight reaction, or collapse, shut down, like possums play dead. So those are the main responses that the vagus nerve uses to keep us safe. But sometimes we misinterpret this, and our vagus nerve can get switched on that all the time. So we're constantly producing these stress hormones, and that is chronic stress. And that is what I found myself in many times while I was raising my son. And again, it's not something because of something he did or who he was. It was about having to navigate these systems that are oppressive.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. That's really fascinating.
Yeah, I get so excited about this, but we have the same exact nervous system as other mammals. So we evolved this way from the time we've become humans. It's not adapted to our modern lifestyle. So if you just suddenly have like your hairs on the back of your neck raised, you might need to like stop and interpret that. Is this really a danger, or am I reacting to something that's very primal and visceral? And is that really true? So we can also, like, yes, we need our intuition, but we can also interpret if we're understanding our nervous system. And that, no matter where we are on that continuum, that can actually help our kids feel safer because we're not gaslighting ourselves. We're not gaslighting the situation or our kids. We're really like, okay, it makes sense to feel scared right now.
Yeah, that makes sense. I like that. So, talking of fear, your son surfs. What's that experience been like?
It's amazing. We found out about this organization through other parents called A Walk on Water. And what they do is they have these amazing professional surfers from California. They come all over the United States and they came to the East Coast where we live. And they do tandem surfing on these giant boards. So they help, they give the kids a little lesson. It's for kids with all different disabilities. They give them a little training, and then they have all these volunteers to keep them safe. Did I mention that this is a free? Yeah, it's free.
Wow.
They get a lot of donations. So they paddle out with the kids. The kid lies on the front of the surfboard, and Ocean just took to it immediately. I mean, his name is Ocean. He's always loved being in the waves, you know, we didn't know when we named him, but they paddle out with the kids. They're very strong and they can, you know, get them on the wave and then they feel that sense. And it's very therapeutic. They feel that sense of surfing the wave. And Ocean has gotten to the point where he can stand up himself after years and years of doing this, like one day event, a couple times a summer. He's gotten to the point where he can pretty much surf himself, but there's paddling out. And the paddling onto the wave is the hardest part, but he gets that feeling and he'll chit chat out in the wave with the surfers and with the other athletes. They call the kids athletes in the program. I just love this program so much, and he has really thrived. The first time he was probably, I don't know, he was tiny, maybe 6 or 7, but he was tiny. And the first time that I saw him go out into the ocean and turn into almost like this little dot, my heart felt like it left my body and paddled out into the ocean and turned into this little dot. And it was like the first time that I really felt my heart leaving my body and having to trust. It was like that visceral sensation of, oh no. Am I doing the right thing? And then go, yeah, I know these people are professionals. This is an organization that's very established. We met the guy, seemed to know what he was doing. I'm going to trust this. And then I see him coming in on this wave with this huge grin on his face and turn around and do it again, do it again. It was just like this elated feeling of relief and joy for him.
Oh,
So that was the first time, and it's
that's
just gotten better.
lovely. Yeah. Oh, that sounds like a great organization.
They're out there. There are amazing
Definitely.
organizations out there.
Yes. Yeah. One of my children did something called the horse course, which was about working with horses and using your own emotions. And there are some brilliant organizations.
It's so good that they exist and that we find out about them from other parents. They're not
Yes.
advertised anywhere.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, it was another parent who said to me about the horse course.
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely. So, you have a mindful meltdown cheat sheet. That sounds so useful.
So it's literally a one page that gives a few options of things to do. Now, what, and this is for the parent, not the kid, what I would recommend is to practice before your child has a meltdown, because you know it's going to happen eventually with, our kids have meltdowns. That's sometimes just how they release their stress because they don't have other tools yet to do it. Like their feelings are much bigger than their self-regulation skills. So often we have to be the one co-regulating with them. And if we're not self-regulated, it's very hard to do. So practicing, picking one, and they're very simple, like an affirmation, a one-word affirmation is one of the skills. But if you want this cheat sheet that gives you something you can put on your fridge to remember, reminds you to practice, connects you with me so that you can, ask questions and get ongoing support, go to that Mindful Meltdown cheat sheet.
Sounds
Say,
fantastic. Ah, could you tell us where to go?
it's healthy, happy yoga. Forward slash meltdown.
That's such a useful tool.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. I bet it is. I've never come across something like that, and it sounds like such a useful tool. So I shall be downloading it myself. Thank you very much.
Great.
Thank you so much for coming on today and for sharing all your advice and telling us about your story. It's been a great chat with you.
Thank you, Victoria. I've been loving listening to your podcast, and I'm so glad that it is available to parents.
Thank you ever so much. Thanks for joining us today on the Autism Mums podcast. We hope you have found a little support, a little solidarity, and a reminder that you are not in this alone. If you enjoyed the episode, we'd love it if you'd follow the show and share it with another parent or carer who might need to hear it. And if you've got a story or a moment you'd like to share, we'd love to hear from you at www.theautismmums.com. Until next time, take care.